If you're in business, you probably have a website, but can your site handle your growth? How many visitors before your site slows down or crashes? What about storage and data security? From web hosting to virtual servers, Pear Networks provides the online infrastructure you need to start, grow, and flourish. When it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. No frustrating chatbots or sitting on hold for hours. Check out pear.com today to learn more. That's PAIR.com.
This program is made possible by the members and donors to the show. For details, visit the Contributes tab at bestoftheleft.com. Now, welcome to the award-winning Best of the Left podcast with clips today from The Majority Report, Democracy Now!, This Week in Blackness, Back Talk from Bitch Media, the Black Guy Who Tips, The Benjamin Dixon Show, and The David Backman Show.
You know, it turns out Sandra Bland was a Black Lives Matter activist. She was just doing what anyone else would do in her situation, driving to her new job. She sees, and now I'm speaking from knowledge that we have gained from this dash cam footage. She is driving down the road. She passes a police officer going in the opposite direction. The police officer bangs a Huey, speeds up significantly to overtake her, and as he's pulling up on her, she pulls over into the right lane to let him pass, and she doesn't signal when she does that. And so he takes that opportunity to pull her over. And then he approaches the car, and you can hear the exchange. Look, you cannot get arrested for being brusque, for not being friendly. There is no legal requirement for you to be super polite. And listen to this exchange. Do we have this audio? I know I didn't plan to play it, but this is just where I
have it.
All right, play this audio. You can hear, this is from the dash cam video. The cop is talking to Sandra Bland sitting in her vehicle. It's stunning. This guy wants not just compliance, not just deference. He just wants her to have an attitude that says, I know I'm in business, I'm in charge. This has nothing to do with his personal safety. There's not a single moment where that officer could ever make an argument that she was in any way a threat to his personal safety. And the reason why I say that is because in the course of him wanting more compliance, he whips out his taser. And you can hear him saying at one point, I'm going to light you up. All right, so play this video.
Okay, man. You okay?
I'm waiting on you. This is your job. I'm waiting on you. What do you want me to
do? You seem very irritated.
I am. I really am. But I feel like this cab is what I'm getting the ticket for. I was getting out of your way. You were speeding up, tailing me. So I move over, and you stop me. So, yeah, I am a little irritated, but that doesn't stop you from giving me a ticket. So.
All right, pause it right there. I want to make sure that people understand what that exchange was. He walks up to the car. He says, you seem a little irritated. And she says, yeah, I am irritated. You pulled me over, even though I just pulled over to let you pass me. And, yeah, I find that really irritating. Now, I guess she could have said, oh, no, officer, I'm not irritated. This is great for me. But instead, she answered him honestly. Yeah, I'm irritated. But that's not going to stop you from giving me a ticket. Well, the officer doesn't like that. Because that's an infraction of the civil code of you can't express irritation to an officer if he asks you about it. I'm not sure what the number is, apparently. Go ahead.
Are you done?
You asked me what's wrong, and I told you.
Okay.
So now I'm done, yeah.
Okay. You mind putting out your cigarette, please, for mine?
Pause it. Okay, so he challenges her. Are you done? Are you done back-talking me? Yes, officer, I'm done. But now the officer is thinking like, oh, okay. Well, you know what? I want more deference. This is how a parent, I think, who gets caught up in their own sense of how they should be respected by their child. And then says, like, I'm going to, you know what? It's not enough that you've complied with what I've just said. I'm going to push you a little further. I'm going to test to see. This is what this is about. And in some way, this dynamic is exactly what was going on with Eric Garner when the cops came out there and said, like, we're going to show everybody on this street what we can do. We're going to show everybody on this street how much deference you should have to us. So this cop says, would you mind putting out your cigarette? Now, maybe the smoke was blowing in his face. He's outside. She's in the car. But she's under no obligation to put out her cigarette. She's under no obligation to... He's writing up his ticket, gives it to her, she signs it. That's the end of this exchange.
I'm in my car, but I have to put out my cigarette.
Well, you can step on out now.
I don't have to step out of my car.
Step out of the car.
No, you don't have the right. You do not have the right to do that.
I do have the right. Now step out or I will remove you.
I refuse to talk to you other than to identify myself.
Step out or I will remove you.
I am getting removed for a failure.
Step out or I will remove you. I'm giving you a lawful order. Get out of the car now or I'm going to remove you.
And I'm calling my
lawyer. I'm going to yank you out of here.
Okay, you're going to yank me out of my car?
Get out.
Okay. All right.
25.
Let's do this.
Yeah, we're going to.
Yeah. Don't touch me.
Get out of the car.
Don't touch me. I'm not under arrest. You don't have the right to say.
You are under arrest.
I'm under arrest for what?
25.7 County FM 1098. 290. Send me another unit. Get out of the car. Get out of the car now.
Why am I being apprehended? You're trying to give me a ticket.
I said
for your
get
failure?
Out of the car.
Why am I being apprehended?
You I'm giving you off order. I'm going to drag you out of here.
So you're going to drag me out of my own car?
Get out of the car.
And then you
I will light
me?
You up. Get out.
Wow.
Now.
Wow.
Get out of the car.
For a failure to signal. You're doing all of this for
get
a failure.
Over there.
To force her out of the car, he whips out his taser to threaten her. She gets out of the car. He then cuffs her behind her back, brings her to the side. You can't see anymore, but you can start to hear that at one point she's not complying enough with him. Even now, her hands are cuffed behind her back. One point, a second cop comes. They've got her face shoved into the ground. Now, there are multiple times after this where the tape is cut. 10 seconds here, 12 seconds there. People who edit tape for a living looked at it. But it's frankly, you don't need to be an editor. It's poorly done. You have cars driving by in the periphery, and they're gone. And then they reappear. That's just poor editing. That's edited, I would guess, because of the audio. We can't see stuff that's happening for the most part. It would have been weird to miss any action over 10 seconds. My guess is there's audio there. And someone not very well versed in video editing didn't know enough to take some of the background noise and replace the audio only. They did it with video editing. And they put this tape out. That in and of itself is really amazing. But here's the bottom line. There is a problem with police officers who think that they have a right to be spoken to, or they have a right to arrest people who speak to them in a manner that they find rude. That's not what your job is as a cop. Your authority does not go to controlling how people relate to you beyond whether or not they're complying with what you have legitimate authority to ask them to do. Are you done? Yes, I'm done. Well, then you know what? Jump through another hoop for me. Because I want to see you dance.
In a later section of the video, which previously came to light after it was filmed by a bystander, Bland accuses police of slamming her head to the ground and says, quote, I can't even hear. She also tells Trooper Encinia she has epilepsy, and he replies, good. Some have claimed the dash cam footage released by authorities appears to have been edited. 3 days after her arrest, Sandra Bland was found dead in her jail cell. Trooper Encinia has been placed on administrative duty, desk duty, for the duration of the investigation into Sandra Bland's death, which the Waller County District Attorney's Office is treating, quote, like a murder investigation, unquote. On Tuesday, Texas State Senator Royce West told reporters the newly released dash cam footage shows Bland should never have been arrested in the first place. Meanwhile, at Sandra Bland's memorial service Tuesday, her mother, Geneva Reed Veal, spoke about the death of her daughter.
Let's be fooled. That was my favorite. Yes. She wasn't my convict. She wasn't the suspect. She was my baby.
Yeah.
And it would behoove y'all to think about what you all were doing at her age.
All right.
So some of the stuff that's in the news is true. Some of the stuff that's in the news is not. But the real issue here is something occurred that is going to change the world.
During this, there was an action happening at Netroots, and so the town hall's happening. Martin O'Malley is up there, and then he's going to get off stage, and then Bernie Sanders is going to go up there. Before that happened, the Black Lives Matter activist took to the room, and they called out the progressive space as a whole. I believe a lot of people have been it's been misreported on numerous occasions that. Supposedly, that they came in there and they were boycott. I mean, like protesting these people.
Elon, didn't you plan it?
Oh, we haven't even gotten to that part yet. Okay. So it was supposed
unruly
to be
unruly black women. How dare they?
So they were boycotting protesting these candidates. When one of the lead organizers on this particular action, Tia Oso of the Black Lives Matter down in Phoenix, has said numerous times that this was more about the progressive space as a whole, like, what the space that represents, that Netroots represents, and the overall space there. And they basically requested that these candidates that were there, that was coming to there to use this space, that is in fact they're the locals there. They requested that they deal with what was happening and respond, and that there should be a seat at the table for them as well. And what started off hilarious was O'Malley decided that he wanted to let folks know that he was trying to respond to it, and he dropped the Black Lives Matter, White Lives Matter, All Lives Matter. That did not go over well. When I say it did not go over well, I mean I was actually in the hall next to it when that happened, because the Twit Media stage was right next to the auditorium where all of this was happening. And I was actually on the stage because our equipment that we broadcast from Netroots with was all stolen the night before. And so I'm on the stage, and I hear White Lives Matter, and I go, and Imani, this is, I want you to be clear, is I literally go, the fuck did I just hear? And I go, and I yell out, like, to no one in particular, did he just say White Lives Matter? And the thing was that there were, like, security guards that were around, cause, like, they had been called down about the fact that our stuff was stolen. And they were just, and they were also doing their job, of securing the hall. And when I yell this out, security is like, yes, he did say it!
With security back?
A black Hispanic. And please note, there were white folks too. Everyone was like, no, he didn't just say that. There was like white dudes like at booths that were just I turn around and like it wasn't just like one or two people. Everyone within range of me was like, yes, he said it. What the fuck? Like it was like people lost their loving mind. Like you saw like the reasonable version of that on the stream. Like the people that were around in the room were just like, what the hell? What the entire hell?
I did not even hear him say White Lives Matter because my brain was like, no. No, that's wrong.
You wouldn't say that.
I'm deaf.
That's ridiculous.
That's ridiculous.
No. At a certain point, O'Malley comes off stage. He basically gets brought off stage because there's not a lot he can do on that situation because especially he's not responding in a way. He's not actually laying anything down that what they're going to do. Like, what's his response to this? And he's already stepped in it with the whole White Lives Matter thing or whatever.
Right. Like, that's egregious. Like, all lives matter is bad enough. White lives matter?
Well, the thing is, that, like, and so let's be really clear on this, because people seem to still be getting confused by this. And anyone who's listening to the show, I feel like, kind of gets this already. But just in case you don't understand this, the reason why it's so annoying and people flip out when they say white lives matter, all lives matter, is because this is not something that's up for debate. We know that white lives matter. We know that white lives, basically everyone, we know whose lives matter. What we don't know is whether or not Black Lives Matter, because every time, we keep dying in the streets, but apparently, Black Lives Matter, of course, they like all lives matter. No. There's an emergency within black life, and that's why when all of a sudden you say something like all lives matter or white lives matter, and you recenter the entire conversation when it's about specifically a community that's under siege currently.
Yep.
But that's just because of black-on-black crime, right? Ow!
Oh my God!
I mean, that's what people don't understand, right? They don't understand that the black community is in a state of emergency right now. We are in crisis.
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 Okay, calm down.
Which sounds like ISIS, but you put a CR on top.
Okay. It's like ISIS.
I need you to breathe.
Worse.
And it's just, you know, you can't. I feel like maybe I'm just so constantly talking about activism and involved in Twitter and politics and what's going on that, like, I cannot fathom a world where a presidential candidate gets on stage in front of a group of black people and says, white lives matter. Oh. All lives matter. It's like, who's working on your campaign?
Mm-hmm. I'm going to go with no black people for 100, Alex.
And the thing is, I know for a fact that there are black people on his campaign. He just stepped in it. It's not a lot of black people, but there are black people involved.
You know, y'all know I ain't a Hillary fan. But to Hillary's credit, she hired Maya Harris as a senior advisor. And Maya Harris she's Kamala Harris' sister. She's the one who basically, she wrote a really great article for Center for American Progress last year where she broke down exactly why it is people of color, specifically women of color, specifically black women, are this growing voting bloc and how you cannot, you know, carry on a campaign ignoring these people. Like, she knows what the fuck she's talking about. And Hillary Clinton was like, I'm gonna hire this bitch because she knows what the fuck she's talking about. She knows how I can reach out to black women and to black people. And
I don't think she said bitch.
I feel like she didn't say I'm gonna hire this bitch.
She might have said I'm gonna hire this bitch. I'm hiring this nigga.
Your Hillary impression is the worst.
The absolute worst.
I am going to hire this bitch.
I mean, like, please don't. No.
Vaguely British.
Yeah. What are you saying?
Is that how all white people sound to you?
Are you high?
No. Should be though.
This is like this. Your
drink your juice.
Your current definition is terrible. It's going down. And so, people are like literally attacking, like yelling at protesters in the hall, right? About like, shut up and let them speak or whatever. Other people, a couple of turned up white folks that were yelling at other white folks, so you shut up and let them speak or whatever. So like, it was becoming a thing. And Sanders comes out and he has the opportunity to like respond to this. And he doesn't. He's like on his stump game. And he's like talking that.
He has talking points that he's hitting. He won't get to hit it until later that night when he has another rally.
Right. And so he starts doing that, and it does not go over well. But the thing is that, like, the way it was reported is that, like, Bernie Sanders was heckled. It was like, no. People were asking him to respond to something. He refused to respond to it, and people did not let that go. Right. Because heckling, like I'm a comic. I take offense to when people call something heckling. Right. It's like, I know what heckling is. I've been heckled before. This was not heckling. This was like, it's like if people are actively trying to get a response out of their, out of someone who apparently wants the support of this community in his bid for the presidency, that's not heckling at that point.
I know heckling, and no one at any point yelled out at Bernie, not funny. Not one time.
Yeah, no, that never occurred. And so people wondered, like, why did they protest this thing? Why do blah, 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 your allies? And anyone who's ever who listens to TWIB here is very much aware of what we've talked about before, about the schism within the progressive space and the black community. And this is something this is only a surprise to people who have not been paying attention, because it's not like something that we haven't been yelling for quite some time now about, like, hey, progressives, white progressives, get your shit together, white progressives, and then they just ignore it. And then all of a sudden this happens, and it becomes very, very public, and they're like, whoa, what are you doing? How are you going to do this? We're on the same side. Are we?
No.
Because when you say we're on the same side, I know a lot of black folks who will tell you flat out, what, you're not on my side. Like, people have clearly mentioned their feelings about this, and loudly. This is not a surprise, oh my God, we have this weird thing that we need to deal with. Like, no, it's been an emergency that has been needed to be dealt with for years, Imani, and they're pretending as if this is some sort of sideswipe, and that, oh my God, you can't, no, this is, no, and I'm like,
why are you protesting your only ally? Why aren't you protesting Republicans? Why aren't you protesting President Obama? Why don't you shut your trap and listen to what black people are saying?
And and the first thing they were saying was that they're not actually protesting, Bernie Sanders or O'Malley. This is the white progressive space as a whole, which, in all honesty, I am totally for it being protested.
Protest the shit out of it, because frankly, white progressives, y'all fucking up.
And then the idea of, and I know that I guess I was not supposed to say anything or voice support for Tioso and Patrice Cullors and everyone that was a part of it. I was supposed to, like, be quiet because of my affiliation with Netroots, which I find hilarious. I'm like, have you paid attention to anything I've said or done?
Are you familiar with my work?
Exactly. This the idea that I would not support what they were doing is madness. Like, this is, that's ridiculous. Like the fact is, one, did I plan it? No. Did I know exactly what they were going to do? No. Had no clue about any of this whatsoever. But once it happens, like, yeah, no, that's, I understand. That's right. No, deal with this. And you know what? In the past 4 days, we've watched all of the presidential candidates scramble to all of a sudden finally make the argument that around this. And please know, no one's still laid out real policy yet.
But
now all of a sudden,
now
they're talking about it. Bernie Sanders is saying her name. He actually said Sandra. Because during the winter process, they were like, say her name, Sandra Bland. Say her name, Sandra Bland.
What are you talking about? You're
Sandra
not clear
Bland?
With your demands.
say whose name? And then he had a really nice gaffe of a tweet that he immediately deleted, where he goes, I will say her name, Sandra Bland, Freddie Gray, Eric Garner. I was like, Bagel and Lox, deep
Hold
fried
on.
Shoelace,
Hold
like,
on.
Rose DeWitt Picator.
Does not see color, and that is why.
Or gender. I mean, here's the thing.
With
your cis names and your cis privilege.
Yep.
But here's the thing. Like, I think that this Black Lives Matter protest did exactly what it was intended to do.
Oh, yeah.
Which was to raise awareness about the Black Lives Matter movement. Particularly to raise awareness about what black women, who are, by the way, need I remind you yet again, we are the most loyal voting Democratic bloc ever. For decades. In history. 2012, we won it for Obama. 2008, we won it for Obama. Terry McAuliffe in Virginia, we won it for him. Bill de Blasio, we won it for him. You cannot win. You cannot win without black women. So when there are a group of black women standing in front of you being like, yo, say her name, Sandra Bland, you're like, what? Sandy Duncan? She had one eye. I don't get it. What's going on?
Hey.
She did have one eye.
She did, but that's not, that sounded like a,
kinfolk.
That
sounded like a,
that
sounded like
a
mean thing.
I like Sandy Duncan.
Yeah,
I had her one eye.
Face of Sandy Duncan. So here's the thing.
Sammy Davis Jr.
So shut up.
One eye.
Oh my God.
I'm all saying one eye people.
I hate everyone here. So
with an eye patch.
Fetty Wap.
And so
Fetty Wap.
Oh my God.
This is just naming people. And so
with one eye.
Just all of you. The thing here, like, so Sanders messed up, right? Cool. He stepped in it. He didn't respond. O'Malley's messed up. Cool. He said white lives matter, all lives matter. Cool. O'Malley immediately comes back and just like and sits down. He talks with Elroy at the Twit Media stage. Apologizes. Boom. Got it. Sanders.
That's all you need.
Sanders. She's not all you need. Because please, though, O'Malley has a really problematic record. But the point is, he did at least respond.
Exactly.
Right.
Right.
Now, Sanders disappears. Boom. But then that, for hours. And when he could have talked directly to people, didn't. That night, he comes out, he said something in his speech. Next day, he all of a sudden he starts mentioning it. And by day, I think by yesterday, it was funny, he was on the Ed Show. It was yesterday or the day before, and he's on the Ed Show, and Ed Show actually brings up economics, and he pivots from economics to go back to discussing Sandra Bland. When he would not even do that, like when it would be yelled at him, and he's calling for political protest as he yells over a political protest.
Right.
All of a sudden, now he's out having this discussion, which is great.
That's the point.
That's the point
of
this.
That's the point.
And at the same time, Black Lives Matter is still being is being demonized. I'm still being attacked right and left, and I didn't even like people are starting now at this point are now linking me to attacks against me. Like I said, when I first saw that that my name popped up on 4chan, I was like, well, that's a problem. And then when I saw that it was popping up even within the Coast community and the Democrat, I was like, huh, interesting. So I decided to actually respond to this, and I actually posted something over at Daily Coast. And at this point, there are 875 comments on this. So if you feel like want to go through that, you can do that. But just
you
so,
have 3 days and a lot of free time.
You have a lot of free time.
We
yeah,
have
do
something
that.
For you.
But I'll say exactly what I said in this particular thing after I pointed out that I did not actually do this and that I ran I ran into the auditorium and immediately started covering the action as I have done across the nation from New York City, Ferguson to Baltimore to Berkeley. I've done it all these places. Some of you have called for my firing from Netroots. Some of you have said I have helped destroy a progressive space. And to those folks, I say, what do you think Netroots is? Every year there are protests. This shouldn't be a surprise. And while I am affiliated with Netroots, my stance on these issues and actions are quite public. And why in the world would Netroots Nation be upset at me for being the exact person that I was hired in the first place? I've been a member of this space before my official capacity for years. I would think that many of you would be happy that Netroots is a space that is a space that's accepting of strong voices and wouldn't ask us to tone down or silence us. Also, Netroots Nation released a statement, a message in support of the action that took place. Why would you want this progressive space to simply be a spot where people drop stump speeches and not listen to the people? Do you know how white Netroots has been? And now you're angry that people of color are actively coming at this space and demanding a place at the table? I find this very problematic. Your desire to protect politicians is being placed above this state of emergency that is black life in America. So just to be clear, I will continue to be as vocal as I have been because I actually give a shit about the progressive space. I want it to be inclusive and supportive of voices that are constantly be silenced and give them a platform to make people listen. So we've seen it start to work already. So as opposed to throwing anger towards the protesters or myself, perhaps you should throw some of that same energy at the candidates so that they will get their shit together. If you care about the coalition, a coalition that can win, then maybe you should care about the voices that have been ignored for decades.
The next piece of news we're going to talk about is over the weekend there was this progressive conference called Netroots Nation, and so they invited Democratic presidential nominees to attend to talk to their audience, and so Bernie Sanders showed up and former Maryland governor Martin O'Malley showed up. Hillary Clinton sat it out because this probably she feels like she's too good for stuff like this.
She's like, I don't think I need Netroots Nation. I'm fine.
And so what happened was, I guess, like, it was supposed to be more of, like, a town hall things where these candidates show up and their members would sit in the audience and just kind of listen to them speak and maybe have a Q&A at the end. But activists from the Black Lives Matter movement showed up, and they disrupted it, and they asked some really great questions. Two women in particular, Tia Oso and Patrice Cullors, and Patrice Cullors is one of the three women who founded the Black Lives Matter movement. They actually went on stage to talk about the deaths of black men and women in police custody, to bring these issues to light. And Martin O'Malley, the former governor, while this was happening, he's trying to comment on it, and he made the comment of, Black Lives Matter, White Lives Matter, All Lives Matter, like completely missing the point of what the movement is trying to say. And, but real talk, like, Martin O'Malley's on nobody's radar, right? So it was really like waiting to see what Bernie Sanders was going to say. So he comes out on stage and the activists, you know, they start to raise their voice again to be like, well, you address this as well. And he just kind of became like this crotchety old white guy. And like, and if you watch the video of this, he would just kind of like speak over them or like not acknowledge them. And he just kept pointing back to this notion that like, yes, there's racial inequality, but we need to, like, in order to fix this, we need to talk about like economic inequality. So like that whole thing happened, and it was so bizarre to see it just watching the video. He just seems so out of touch about this movement that's, you know, happening on the ground with people and that affect their real lives. And so a lot of black activists on Twitter like called him out on it, and a lot of supporters for Bernie Sanders would then respond to the activists, the Black Lives Matter activists, and say things like, yes, well, you know, Bernie Sanders marched with MLK or like, you know, he was a big civil rights activist, as if those things means that he's like on point and in touch with the Black Lives Matter movement. So that was like a huge critique of that. And I read this really great piece on Salon titled Dear White Progressives, Stop Telling Black People How to Vote by Janessa Robinson. And in it, she talks about how it's really condescending for for white progressives to tell black people like how they should be feeling about this candidate. A really great line from it was, she said, quote, "This entire culture of white people feeling as though they know what's best for blacks is rooted in paternalism." And so then she talks about like the history of black folks in America and how they arrived here, right? And what they've been told that they can and cannot do. And another quote that she said was, "The reality is that no part of this political system truly benefits black liberation when our institutions are built on anti-blackness. The entire political system perpetuates systems of oppression, and therefore each candidate and party cannot escape complicity in reinforcing oppression of blacks." I just thought this was so interesting to talk about, in terms of what the upcoming years of campaigning will look like.
Because like right now, political candidates, they haven't established exactly what they're going to push, what their policies are going to be. Basically, the whole horse race right now is all about rhetoric and all about what they're saying. And they're kind of figuring out who they are as voters are figuring out who the candidates are. So I think this is a really interesting time to see like, okay, well, how do they react to these kinds of things? And what is going to be on their policy agenda in a few years? You know, when people are running for president and they have their platform set, when the Democrats put together their national platform, what's going to be on it that responds to the social issues that have really been hopefully on everyone's mind for the last 2 or 3 years? You know, how are there ways that our policies can address systemic racism and discrimination and widespread police violence? Are there ways that we can address that with policies? And when, what are these candidates going to propose? I think that's really interesting to think about what's going to come up and how hopefully the policies that are discussed in the presidential election are going to reflect on what people have been pushing for in the streets for the past few years. You know, I hope that, I don't know, presidential candidates will take their cues from protesters, but what if they did?
Yeah, that would be incredible. It's just, I think that one of the shocking things about, for me, in viewing this scenario unfold, is how seemingly out of touch these candidates are to social issues that are affecting like a huge population in America. Like a couple days after what happened at Netroots, Hillary's campaign released a statement from Hillary's, and in it she says, like, Black Lives Matter. And I forget where I read this, but I think it may have been on Twitter, but somebody commented, like Hillary saying that Black Lives Matter it is important, but it also just kind of means that maybe she hired, like, a black advisor to tell her to say this, right? So we really have to watch closely to how Democratic candidates will be campaigning and what kind of legislation they will propose, because I think there's this notion that, like, people of color should vote Democrat because we don't want a Republican in office, but are Democrats doing work for people of color, especially black folks?
I think that hearing the phrase "all lives matter" on stage is depressing. It really brings to mind, there was another conference last week called Blog Her, which is like a big national meetup of specifically women who are writers online. And they had a keynote panel from two of the founders of Black Lives Matters, including Opal Tometi. And she had such a great quote. So I think this is such a good contrast to what happened at Netroots. What happened at Blogger is, oh, these people didn't have to disrupt the conference. They were actually the keynote speakers on stage and when talked about all the issues with Black Lives Matter. And here's the quote from Opal Tometi that I like the most. She says, "We're living in a crisis era, and people are still wanting to be colorblind and to gloss over and to act like we're in this post-racial era. And we're not. We know we're not." And she added, "We know that all lives matter. We are well aware of that. But the reality is that anti-black violence is killing our people and it's undermining our lives at every corner. And we have to get very real and precise about what is taking place." And so I think that over the last few months, there's been so much written about why it's important to say Black Lives Matter and not be like, "But all lives matter." You know, because, and I think that's really what she's speaking to, is that it's, I think people really want to think that we've progressed beyond a point that we have. You know, I think white people specifically, really want to think that everything's okay. And it's not.
I mean, how could we possibly win, like, just recently the case with Sandra Bland, who got pulled over for not using her turn signal.
Yeah. And I think that a lot of white people think, like, "Oh man, sucks for that person. Like, that case is bad. Oh, and this other case is bad. And this other case is bad." But don't see that as being like racism is a systemic and oppressive force in our society.
Right.
Or like what Bernie Sanders said basically is like, "Oh yeah, racism is bad, but like, economic discrimination is more important. Class trumps race in America." And I just don't think we should think that way. You know, I think it should be, we can address, racism, and we can discuss economic inequalities, and those things are really interconnected in a lot of ways. And so I don't think it's helpful to be like, "Yeah, okay, be quiet about racism. We're going to focus on class."
I mean, somebody needs to get Bernie Sanders into some type of like racial justice 101 course, and so he can figure this shit out, because this is unfathomable to me.
Yeah, I mean, I like Bernie Sanders a lot. I like a lot of things that he does, and so I want to see him develop in this way.
Yes.
You know, I think he has a lot of time before, like, the actual nomination process comes, and it would be interesting to see him develop a more political consciousness around this.
The issue here is, I was a mayor for 8 years. Being a cop is a very, very difficult job. But the word has got to get out that when police act inappropriately, and of course in this case there has to be a thorough investigation, but for too many years, too many mostly black suspects have been treated terribly and in some cases murdered. That is unacceptable. And police officers have got to be held accountable for their actions. Second of all, in the neighborhood where this gentleman lives, as I understand it, the unemployment rate is over 50%. Over 50%. What we have got to do as a nation is understand that we have got to create millions of jobs to put people back to work to make sure the kids are in schools and not in jails. So short term, we got to make sure that police officers have cameras. We got to make sure that we have real police reform so that suspects are treated with respect. Long term, we got to make sure that our young people are working, they're in school, they're not hanging out on street corners.
So as president, though, what do you do? I mean, how do you fix those problems? We've been hearing about those problems, as you and I know, for decades.
I've, along with John Conyers of Michigan, I've introduced legislation which would create 1 million jobs for young people in this country in some of the hardest pressed areas of America. Real unemployment is a serious problem in this country. You've got to put our people back to work. I think the federal government has got to work with state and local governments to make sure that we move toward in Burlington, Vermont, when I was the mayor, we called community policing, where police are perceived as part of the community, the good guys, rather than as interlopers, people who are from the outside coming.
Okay. Here's a problem with that, in my opinion. What I hear there is a message that's twofold. One is, hey, if we can get the police to do community policing and we can get them to be more responsible, then we can solve some of this oppression and some of this police abuse towards black people. I agree with that. I don't think he went far enough. I think he also needs to be looking at prosecuting police officers. I think he needs to be looking at sending in Loretta Lynch whenever it's time for things like this to happen. He needs to be looking at cover-ups. He needs to be looking at federal investigations, that kind of shit. I need to know that, because that's what President Obama does. And I don't think it's too much to ask to say that, you should have to do that as well. Next guy. I don't want it to stop just because you're white and it's not your problem. Second thing, that I noticed there, and this is always going to be a problem, he shouldn't be bringing up jobs at all in the context of this discussion. Because what that sounds like to me is the same thing it sounded like when the St. Louis Cardinals fans, and they're racist asses, whenever the Black Lives Matter people protested at the St. Louis Cardinals baseball games, the racist fans used to come outside and say, why don't you just get a job?
Right!
They used to tell those people, you don't have anything better to do than protest this? Why don't you just get a job? Yeah, a job is not going to make me not black, you stupid motherfucker. All right, now I don't care if you march with Martin Luther King, and that's what you came away with, then you didn't learn shit. Sorry. Because the problem is still bigger than just whether or not I have a job or not. And if that isn't recognized in what you're talking about, then we can't talk. A job shouldn't even fucking come up. That shouldn't even be a part of the discussion. When they're talking about race, he should never be like, well, the unemployment rate is what's the real... No, it's not the real problem.
Mm-mm.
If they weren't hanging out on the corner, why the fuck can't I hang out on the corner in my neighborhood?
Right, where I live.
Why can't I do that? Do white people not hang out on the corner anymore? Is that not a thing? When I look at McKinney and I see a person that, kids that go into a pool party, they're not hanging on the corner. They're going to have fun and swim with their friends. Police show up and throw a young girl on the ground, put their knee in her back, pull a gun on young black men. That didn't seem like a problem with jobs. I'm sorry, Bernie, but you're missing the motherfucking boat. And I cannot give you my vote for that shit. And I cannot give your obtuse fans who are doing you a great disservice, doing your campaign a great disservice,
mm-hmm.
with their condescending attitudes and refusal to listen to what I'm saying. I cannot vote with people like that. I'm sorry, Hillary Clinton 2016. I don't give a fuck. If you're trying to tell me, like, well, Bernie's not good on that, as good as you want to be on race, but Hillary ain't either, then I might as well just give my vote to Hillary, right? I mean, fuck, y'all don't care. Hey, we're not going to be good allies, so hey, fuck it. Fuck that shit. Not that an ally is worth anything anyway, but yeah, it's 100% I'm not going to deal with it. I'm tired of remembering black people's names who have died by the police.
Come on now.
I am going to die with these names tattooed on my soul. That's how serious it is.
Mm-hmm.
So I cannot stomach another motherfucker telling me to trust somebody who will not speak about it now. I don't need you to just say her name when no black people are around.
Come on now.
To an audience of white people. I need you to say the name when we're around. I need you to say the name at Netroots. I need you to sit down and meet with those activists. I needed you to listen. We didn't like you're going to sit up there and be like, well, if you don't trust my track record, I'm out of here then. Oh, so the first time it gets hard, you're out. Well, I don't want you as president then, because that's not the kind of fucking ally I need. Shit got difficult. I'm done. I don't like your attitude. I'm done. Why aren't you Negroes being servile? I'm done. Why are you Negroes have something to say? I'm done. And we're supposed to sit down and worship that?
Nope.
I'm supposed to want that in office? Fuck that. Fuck that shit. I'd rather vote for the first woman president just on a whim then, if that's the fuck we doing. I'm done trying to be fucking nice about this shit, man. I've been nice and you guys have been obtuse every goddamn day. Let me read a quote from you guys. First, I must confess that over the past few years, I've been gravely disappointed with the white moderate. I've almost reached the regrettable conclusion that the Negro's great stumbling block in his stride toward freedom is not the white citizen's counselor or the Ku Klux Klaner, but the white moderate, who is more devoted to order than to justice, who prefers a negative peace, which is the absence of tension, to a positive peace, which is the presence of justice, who constantly says, I agree with you in the goal you seek, but I cannot agree with your methods or direct action. Who is paternalistic, believes he can set the timetable for another man's freedom, who lives by a mythical concept of time, and who constantly advises the Negro to wait for a more convenient season. Shallow understanding from people of goodwill is more frustrating than absolute misunderstanding from people of ill will. Lukewarm acceptance is much more bewildering than outright rejection. Martin Luther King Jr.
Look, I think Bernie was too trapped in his script. They both did poorly. O'Malley, I thought, did poorly, too. He obviously clearly doesn't understand what Black Lives Matter means. We all know that people should believe that all lives matter. When O'Malley said all lives should matter, of course all lives should matter. The reason why the slogan Black Lives Matter has stuck is because it says something that is obvious, but is actually, in many sense, not actually lived. And that's the whole point of the saying. You're not quite getting, and there's a certain amount of irony there, but, you know, to a certain extent, like, the whole thing felt like Grandpa doesn't get what's going on. And I felt that with O'Malley, and I felt that with Bernie Sanders. And, you know, I think part of the problem is, for white people, I mean, it's too general to say that, but you know, I'm speaking broadly now. All lives matter is sometimes a metaphor. Or I should say, a Black Lives Matter is a metaphor. And I think Bernie Sanders addressed it on that level, where there are policies that he would prescribe. And part of this is also his worldview, is that race is secondary to class in the way that our society is organized. And I think in America, of all places, that's a very hard argument to make. They're far more intertwined, I think. But it is true that Bernie's policies will help African Americans, and perhaps arguably more so disproportionately, will provide more help disproportionately to African Americans because they have been systemically oppressed and shut out of opportunities. But there's also a very real problem of race that impacts you whether or not you're a wealthy black person or a poor black person. And, you know, part of that was, you know, Sandra Bland. She's going to get a job. She's driving to get a college graduate, I think, right? I mean, it's not necessarily that she doesn't have the opportunities. It's that fundamentally there is a tremendous amount of racism in this country, that particularly when it comes to authority, way that African Americans are treated is fundamentally different. And I think Sanders missed it. With all that said, if I was running against Bernie Sanders in the primary, I'd be bummed that this happened in July, that his, I won't say tone deafness, but maybe tone deafness on this subject was revealed, because it gives him time to correct it. I mean, theoretically, the point of a protest like that, particularly in a place that is nominally allied or with people who you perceive to be potential allies or allies who you perceive as not paying enough attention and not spending enough resources and time and understanding of these issues, this is why you do that. So that your issue gets more prominence, and so that it becomes part of the agenda of people running for elected office, in addition to other things. And so from that perspective, you know, the next day, Bernie Sanders is in Dallas, and he mentions Sandra Bland's name. And so he learned something. He learned that for a very important constituency in the Democratic Party, there are issues that he may not be fully sensitive to. Now, I would like to have thought and that he had staffers or had an awareness or a deeper understanding of this stuff. But I would like it for all politicians to have that. And I would argue that probably none of them do. And so, if this is how it works, this is how it works, great. You know, I mean, that's the point of it. If it was not valuable for Bernie Sanders to learn a lesson, and O'Malley to learn a lesson, and frankly, everybody involved in it to learn a lesson, if there was no value in that, then there was no point in the protest in the first place. So to see Bernie Sanders respond to it, I think that's a good thing.
One asshole created a White Progressives TM Twitter account.
Nah.
White Prog TM. Just to talk shit at me. Because you know where that comes from. That anger. That's Nicole Sandler bullshit. Because she literally said, and I'm supposed to be smeared as some white progressive TM. I'm not, and not respond back or whatever. So she's.
That,
She's still butthurt from months back.
Oh, yeah, and she, I saw her and her little white friend cronies complaining about how they don't feel safe at Netroots anymore.
That was the next thing.
Can you believe that shit?
Oh, my God.
I don't feel safe because Netroots was supposed to be this really safe little cozy space for white people to come and talk about drones and banks and GMO-free what the fuck ever. And now we've got these black ladies and they're talking about...
There were some black men's, too.
And the black men's.
And I gotta say, like, I was there. I was at Netroots. I was watching. There was no point where I thought that they were like, okay, you know what? Now, what we're gonna do next, I need you to say her name. Now we're gonna sacrifice a white person. Just one, though. Just one. And then we're all gonna be fine. There was no point. There was no point where there was any issue. Nothing happened except people used their voices to make themselves heard.
And if you find that terrifying,
then it's very scary.
And Summer, there's a blog post that Chris Savage, who's a good man, and as is his wife, Anne, but he posts over, he's like always prominent at Netroots. So if you were at Netroots, you know who he is. He blogs under the name Eclectablog. He posted a guest post from a black woman, a black activist who was at Netroots. Her name is Summer Foster, I believe. And she wrote about how when the protesters first came in, she was trying to figure out whether or not she was going to stand up and join them. And then she started to listen to the people around her, and she heard a lot of white people expressing their annoyance and how rude and disruptive and, oh my God, and heard one white person say, ugh, these people are animals. Why don't they go back to Baltimore? And now that's the kind of shit that you hear from conservatives every time there's another black death on Twitter. They're animals. They're unruly.
But not Ferguson, but Baltimore.
And that's the kind of shit that white progressives think don't happen in white progressive spaces. They think, well, we're liberals, so obviously black people, come on, we got you. I mean, to a certain extent, we got you. As long as you don't make too much noise, we totally have you. Why are you so loud? You're disrupting.
Can you just sit here as our friend silently and nod your head sometime?
So on sometime in 2016, we're gonna need you guys to vote. But until then, could you shut the fuck up and stop talking about how you're dying in the street? Because it's really bumming us out.
Friends and neighbors, put a smile on the gloomiest face. Just take your little troubles and share them with the folks next door. Makes it twice as easy to bear them. That's what friends are for. Cause if your friends and neighbors, that is something money won't buy.
I want to play for you a clip of Bernie Sanders, and he's talking about Sandra Bland's arrest. And I want you to understand, I want you to listen to it, and I want you to see that somebody on Team Bernie got the message. Somebody on Team Bernie knows what's up and knows what must be done.
Oh, there's a lot that we have to do.
This is Bernie Sanders, and he is talking about criminal justice reform. In specific, he is talking about Sandra Bland's arrest. Let's listen in. He's on The Ed Show on MSNBC. Here we go.
Oh, there's a lot that we have to do, Ed. We have more people in jail than any other country on earth. Millions of lives have been destroyed because people are in jail for non-violent crimes. So we have to take a look at mandatory minimums. We have to take a whole new look, I think, at our drug policy. We have to look at the militarization of police forces all over this country. We have to take a look at use of force policy. That's what you saw in that dreadful and painful video of Sandra Bland. What you saw is an aggressive, overactive police officer who dragged this woman out of her car, assaulted her, sent her to jail for what crime? A minor traffic violation. That happens all over this country, and it especially happens to people of color. So we need a real hard look at the way police departments function in America, and we need to figure out a way that in terms of how we treat African Americans so that young people can walk down the street without having to worry about whether they're going to be harassed or shot in the back.
Yeah. That's absolutely somebody on Team Bernie. Bernie Sanders himself, obviously. But somebody on Team Bernie understands what he is going to have to do to beat Hillary Clinton. He must. Listen, folks. It was painful for people to watch Bernie Sanders get interrupted on last Saturday. And a lot of people have been running, and I've been talking about this all week, and I'll probably, hopefully this is the last day I have to talk about it. But people have been running to Bernie's defense. And people have been running to his defense by attacking or trying to undermine or question the validity and the methodology of Black Lives Matter to the detriment of Bernie Sanders. What Bernie Sanders has to do to win, he must begin to communicate his message in a language that is not only palatable, but is relevant to other demographics that he needs to capture. Bernie must get minorities and Bernie must get women. And one thing that Hillary Clinton has locked down right now is minorities and women. So there cannot be any equivocation. There cannot be any fear. There can't be. You cannot win this by lecturing them. You cannot do this by trying to tell Black people that their problems can all be fixed if we just look at economics, when in reality, we do have an economic problem. Clearly, I can show you all of the economic roots of systemic racism. That is one thing I harp on a regular basis. Racism is just the tool of economic exploitation. White supremacy itself was for nothing else but to pull money out of people, to extract wealth out of people. I can definitely show you the economic roots, and that if we undo some of the economic problems, if we undo some of the things that were done to us in 1981 and hence after, then it would make it better for everyone. However, there are additional problems, and there are additional problems that must be addressed. And I'm so glad that there are some pragmatic adults on Bernie Sanders' team who can say, you know what? Saturday, we had a little bump in the road, but we can absolutely win the minority vote for two reasons. One, Bernie has a great track record. That's true for three reasons. One, he has a great track record. Two, his economic policies are actually absolutely in line with the very same criticism of Black people that we have for, I'm sorry, the criticism that Black people have of Barack Obama. The criticism that most Black people have of Barack Obama is that he's not far enough to the left. Believe it or not. I mean, think about it. Well, maybe you don't go. So let me tell you about it. When I go to barbershops to get my hair cut, which I absolutely need to do, right? I don't hear anybody criticizing Obama about austerity. Man, we just need a little bit more austerity. If we just cut taxes a little bit more, everything will be great for the Black community. No. The critique of Barack Obama and the modern Democratic Party is that from African Americans is to the left of Barack Obama, not the right. We are upset because politicians have been bought by lobbyists and corporations. So Bernie Sanders can win for that reason. But then finally, Bernie Sanders can win because he, at his core, is a populist. But if we get so caught up, and this is why I titled it what I titled it this morning. If we get so caught up on trying to defend Bernie instead of trying to make Bernie better for the general election and make him better to absolutely destroy Hillary Clinton, then we're going to do more damage to Bernie than we are good. And that's really all I've been saying all week long. But, you know, sometimes when you title things and you title it in a negative connotation, people can't see. Right. That's why I said, you know what? I'm not going to title it, you know, anything negative. I'm going to say everything positive this morning, but I'm going to say the same exact thing that I've been saying all week. Now, back to the Sandra Bland video and Bernie Sanders and why Saturday was so important. What happened at Netroots Nation was pivotal. I cannot stress to you enough, what happened on Saturday was a gift to Bernie Sanders and Martin O'Malley. And that's why I think Hillary Clinton lost out by not being there. You're not challenged. Challenges, okay, here's my philosophical idealistic side. Challenges make you stronger. And listening to Bernie Sanders now, he probably understood before Saturday, right? but he didn't have the verbiage. He didn't have the language. He didn't have the talking points. And he was more timid with regard to just coming out and unashamedly saying that there is systemic racism in America. If you cannot say that sentence right now without fear of what people are going to say, you cannot get the minority vote. And if we're talking about how Bernie can win, the only way he could win is if he is a better advocate for African-American issues than Barack Obama, which is easy. And he's a better advocate for women issues than Hillary Clinton, which is that's the next phase. Do you think Bernie has had a battle with a demographic with minorities? This is just entry level. Wait until Bernie has to address women-specific issues, which I think he's capable of doing. I'm not doubting that. What I'm saying is the women vote, the female vote. I can't even say the right grammar this morning. I got too much coffee in me, folks. The female vote is almost locked down for Hillary Clinton. Of course, there's some outliers. Yes, there are going to be some segments that wouldn't vote for Hillary if their life depended on it, right? We're talking about the average. Bernie Sanders has to go in like a bat out of hell and capture that demographic as well. That, ladies and gentlemen, is the only way Bernie Sanders can give Hillary enough hell to actually win this primary.
All right, let's get to some politics. A lot has been going on. I want to talk a little bit about Bernie Sanders. Democratic presidential candidate Bernie Sanders was interviewed over the weekend. He said that economic inequality and institutional racism are parallel problems that must be addressed simultaneously. I could not agree with Bernie more. Let's take a look at the clip.
I've been involved in the civil rights movement all of my life. And I believe that we have to deal with this issue of institutional racism. But this is what I also believe. And speaking to the SCLC last night, this is what I quoted. Martin Luther King, when he died, when he was assassinated, understood and was working on a poor people's march. We have to end institutional racism, but we have to deal with the reality that 50% of young black kids are unemployed, that we have massive poverty in our country, and we have an unsustainable level of income and wealth inequality.
The criticism that's come to you at this, though, is that your answer is always economic injustice, and that many African-American activists believe, no, you've got to deal with race. Racism is a separate, institutional racism is a separate problem from economic injustice.
They are parallel problems. They are absolutely correct.
This is such a simple thing that so many people, actually both on the left and right, but for different reasons, don't always seem to understand. Income inequality is a huge problem, and it has numerous causes. Racism is a huge problem, and the institutional component of racism is definitely very much connected to the problem of income inequality. You could take any ethnic or cultural identifier and see a pattern of similar issues depending on the level of the economic ladder that those individuals sit at. So Bernie Sanders, first of all, needs to be really careful. And I say this slightly jokingly, but actually not. Many people who have pointed out the connection between racism and economic inequality and disparities have been attacked, some even assassinated in history. So we have to think about that. But the Venn diagram of these issues really does overlap a lot. Income inequality has its own set of problems that aren't necessarily race issues. Racism has its own problems, which aren't necessarily income inequality problems. Poor white people have been screwed pretty badly in this country, but they still have some of the advantages that can be lost when you don't have whiteness as a factor, as a trait in the United States. Race is sort of the elephant in the room when we're talking about income inequality. Income inequality is heavily racialized. The legacy of discrimination means that black people and Hispanic people and Native Americans are much more likely to suffer from a lack of opportunity, which can lead to higher unemployment, higher poverty rates, etc. And that is a factor, of course, in income inequality. So it doesn't necessarily make for good politics for candidates to be so direct in saying, yeah, not only income inequality, but race and its connection all need to be addressed. That can be political suicide in many cases, because there are people who think that either racism is not a problem or that it's not a problem that we should be working to fix. But it is the reality, no question about it. And absolutely fantastic that Bernie Sanders is saying this.
If you're supposedly so progressive, what does that actually mean? If you're so progressive and you're sitting there critiquing the Black Lives Matter movement as they're screaming for help, and I've heard so much different bullshit from folks, and not to be funny, it's white folks, and I know that white and white progressives are very angry at the idea of being called white progressives.
Oh my God, it's racist! How can you be so racist? You're calling us white because you're white.
That's not, you got yeah.
And you're progressives, and your whiteness is directly related to the way that you are interacting with Black progressives. It's really not that hard.
And the fact is, it's to be offended at the idea of being referred to as a white progressive. By the way, the thing is, I was saying, like, white progressive TM. Like, I'm tired of being referred to as white progressive TM. I saw that from a friend of the show, Nicole Sandler. And so, which is funny because the whole concept of the whole white progressive TM was specifically because we started using it with white people TM. And white progressives. Imani, didn't you use it with another group?
I said, yeah, I do white feminists. White feminists, because I want people to know.
It's about the brand.
It's about the brand. It's not about individual people. And right. If whatever someone is, when people are saying stuff about white progressives or white feminists and it doesn't apply to you, then it doesn't apply to you. Look, don't worry about it.
If you are not actively, a part of the brand, then it's not really a critique on you, but.
And the fact that you get upset when someone says white progressives mean that it is about you and then you have some deeper issues to deal with.
And how dare you? You mentioned stuff like, first of all, like white folks just in general need to get over that, because the fact is that Black folks get referred to as Black all the time. And the thing is, like, I've said this so many times, it is not an issue that you call me Black. It is whatever the thought process that comes after you say Black.
Right.
So if you say, hey, a Black guy walked in the room, whatever, I don't care. Hey, a Black guy walked in the room, hold my purse.
Right.
Then we have a problem.
Right.
And same thing with white folks. If I said, the white progressives, white people are there, whatever. If I was like, all white people are crackers, which, by the way, I don't even think is that problematic, and, you know, but whatever. If I was actually making a claim on all white folks, then that's one thing. But specifically to call out the brand of white progressives, which, if you don't understand that progressivism, like the space itself, has been predominantly white people for decades. Like, literally, this is just what it is. The fact is, that's why when I talk to people of color, when I first started going to Netroots, and I was like, hey, you guys coming to Netroots? And they're like, no, it's all a bunch of white people over there. And I got there, and I was like, holy shit, this place is white. It's so white. Like, the progressive movement, when you look at progressive orgs, like, I believe in the DFA statement, because, like, Imani keeps talking about the Democracy for America actually changed how they're going to be dealing with candidates and what questions they will be asking when they are doing endorsements and shit like that, mm-hmm. and to include racial justice, because this is something that hasn't been included, which, by the way,
And not just racial justice, white supremacy, structural racism, the movement for Black lives. I mean, I'm not like a presidential historian, but I feel pretty safe in saying that this is the first time in America's history that Democratic candidates are going to have to speak directly about white supremacy and racism. And why is that? That's because those black women stood up there at Netroots and shouted, listen to what I'm saying. Say her name. Which side are you on? That is directly because of that. And so you still have these white folks who are still complaining about how unruly and unstrategic and how Black Lives Matter, they don't have an agenda.
Not to calm the fuck out.
You need to just seriously stop it. That's ridiculous.
So this is just a note that came from DFA, from Democracy for America. This is what they sent out, I think on Monday. They said, as Time Magazine reported on Friday, Democracy for America is making some big important changes to our endorsement process, in a piece highlighting DFA's decision to evaluate how candidates local, state, and federal are addressing structural racism, Time reporter Sam Frizzle wrote. The new approach announced by DFA marks a significant shift for one of the country's largest progressive activist networks and reflects the influence of the Black Lives Matter movement is having. Because we're a family here at DFA, I want to take a moment to explain these changes, to hear your thoughts, and hopefully start a real, perhaps challenging conversation within our community about how the progressive movement should address structural racism. At Netroots Nation this year, a team of black women affiliated with the Black Lives, with the movement for Black Lives, actually, I mean, like Patrice Cullors, she's like one of the co-founders of Black Lives Matter, but okay, conducted an incredibly effective direct action during the presidential town hall with Governor O'Malley and Martin O'Malley and Senator Bernie Sanders. So by the way, so DFA, Democracy for America, is literally saying like that. No, that was actually really good. That was actually really effective what they did. But no, please, white people,
continue to complain. Complain about how it's so strategic and black people are so stupid and so rude. And oh my God, you're ruining Netroots. No one's ever going to want to show up at Netroots again.
And I'll have a statement about that. The organizers called on both candidates to directly acknowledge the black women who have died in the custody of police, including Sandra Bland, who was found dead in her jail cell in Texas just days earlier. And they asked them to specifically lay out what they would do in office to disrupt and dismantle structural racism in our criminal justice system and beyond. Both candidates disappointed the Black Lives Matter organizers with the answers. They disappointed me as well. I want to be very clear. I have respect for all of the presidential candidates, and I plan to fight hard alongside of them and you to advance a progressive platform this year and in the years to come. That said, I want to explain why I believe the answers were inadequate and how important I think it is for us as a movement to start pushing ourselves and candidates for all office for better answers when it comes to racial justice. You can read the rest of this Democracy for America. But the point is that, like, they are actively, this space understands that they need to hear things. And when, and in fact, it's that, like, I know I'm right. Like, I know for a fact that we are, in fact, on the right side of history.
Of course we are. Dude, people, activists in the future are going to look back at the Black Lives Matter movement and use that as an example for how to do direct action and activism. Anyone who, after reading the DFA press release, still thinks that those black women were just stupid and rude and unruly and you're wrong. You're just absolutely wrong. They had a goal. They set their goal. Now everybody has to talk about the killing of black people at the hands of the police.
Thanks for listening, everyone. You know, et cetera, et cetera. If you'd like to call in and leave a message in response, the number to dial is 202-999-3991. I obviously let this show run way long. There was a lot to be said, and I only have time for one final analogy to cap it all off. Listeners know I'm a big fan of analogies. I recognize they are all totally imperfect, but I think they are good learning tools. So if after all of that, you still have even an inkling of a question as to why we say Black Lives Matter instead of All Lives Matter, or if you know, but you'd like another tool in your tool belt to help educate other people, then here's an analogy that went sort of viral on Reddit because it seems to be educating a lot of people on this. It's getting through to people who could not be gotten through to otherwise. So here's the analogy. Imagine that you're sitting down to dinner with your family, and while everyone else gets a serving of the meal, you don't get any. So you say, I should get my fair share. And as a direct response to this, your dad corrects you, saying, everyone should get their fair share. Now, that's a wonderful sentiment. Indeed, everyone should. And that was kind of your point in the first place, that you should be part of everyone, and you should get your fair share also. However, Dad's smart-ass comment just dismissed you and didn't solve the problem that you still hadn't gotten any. The problem is that the statement, "I should get my fair share," had an implicit "to" at the end of it. I should get my fair share too, just like everyone else. But your dad's response treated your statement as though you meant, "only I should get my fair share," which clearly was not your intention. As a result, his statement that everyone should get their fair share, while true, only served to ignore the problem you were trying to point out. That's the situation with the Black Lives Matter movement. Culture, laws, the arts, religion, and everyone else repeatedly suggest that all lives should matter. Clearly, that is a message that already abounds in our society. The problem is that, in practice, the world doesn't work that way. And it goes on a little bit from there, but you get the idea. I'm going to link to this in the show notes so you can read the whole thing and share it widely and help educate. It is not the job of the Black Lives Matter movement to cater to the lowest common denominator of uncomfortable white people. It is the job of knowledgeable white people and anyone else who wants to join in to educate everyone and get us all on board so that when people say Black Lives Matter, they don't hear an echo of all lives matter, or much worse, white lives matter. That's going to be it for today. So coming to you from inside the Beltway, yet outside the conventional wisdom of Washington, D.C., my name is Jay, and this has been the Best of the Left podcast, coming to you every Tuesday and Friday, thanks entirely to the members and donors to the show from bestoftheleft.com.
And it's a crying shame how we get so trained. We can't see past all the sad stories and wonder why. We can't see past our sad stories and forget how to listen. We can't see past our sad stories and wonder what we're doing.
You love podcasts. The stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcast-free today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcast-free.